Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. On this show, we feature libertarian candidates running for office who will explain how they'll downsize government to make your life better and to keep America prosperous, safe, and at peace. Learn more about the Libertarian Party at lp.org and facebook.com/libertarians. When a doctor cuts out a cancerous tumor, she doesn't then replace it with a slightly different tumor. She replaces it with nothing. So many of our federal departments and programs damage the quality of our lives. Farm subsidies, the war on drugs, the Department of Education, and the Patriot Act only increase crime, damage education, and trample civil liberties. The bad news is that Republican and Democrat legislators have repeatedly refused to sponsor legislation to abolish and repeal these counterproductive programs. But the good news is that many libertarian candidates for U.S. Congress have pledged to sponsor legislation to eliminate these harmful federal programs. Later in the show, we'll talk to James Carr, candidate for U.S. Congress in Virginia. But first, we'll talk to Matt Solido, candidate for U.S. Congress in Texas, District 12. Matt is a certified senior project manager who has worked with such companies as Southwest Airlines, Capital One Bank, FedEx, Radio Shack, Microsoft, Compaq, HP, Sprint, Verizon, and others on large-scale initiatives with budgets in excess of $25 million. He's serious about cutting government. He's running this year for Congress in District 12 in Texas. Matt, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Arvind. I appreciate the opportunity.
Now, one of the things you've talked about is ending foreign wars. And, you know, a lot of people say that if we end foreign wars, that's going to put America in danger. What do you say about that?
Well, I would respectfully disagree with that line of logic. Mm-hmm. In short, I think that our current engagements that we have, I know we're saying that we're going to reduce our presence in Afghanistan, and Iraq is still a bit messy. Mm-hmm. There are other places around the globe that we've got to seriously look at as well, where we have a military presence. I think it actually increases the likelihood that people are going to be kind of taking a more anti-American stance against us. Now, I'm not saying that we should be lax on our own home defense, on the contrary, mm-hmm. but we are currently in approximately 130 countries around the world, including such places as Germany, where we've got about 50,000 troops located currently. We've got about 30,000 troops in the DMZ on the Korean Peninsula. Mm-hmm. Even though they're still at war, if you look at the from a financial standpoint, both South Korea and Japan, who are the ones who are most at risk against North Korea, mm-hmm. they've got a GDP, for example, South Korea over North Korea's got about 40 times GDP of that its northern neighbor. Japan, sure. of course, many times larger than that. So to that point, I would strongly disagree with that. I think that when we take the, and you hear the term global cop quite often, it mm-hmm. really does personify our foreign policy, at least since the end of World War II. And mm-hmm. in decreasing that, that will help, obviously, help with our national debt. As mm-hmm. you probably are well aware, we spend the United States more on military every year than every other country in the world combined. Mm-hmm. So from an economic and, I would dare say, social standpoint, with our relationships, we're keeping trade partners, et cetera, actually hindered because of our current policies.
Okay, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, if we're focusing so much of our resources and all that on trying to interfere everywhere all the time, not only are we probably maybe not making the most friends, but we're also actually hampering our ability to actually focus on our own defense. We can't do everything at the same time well. And it seems that sometimes even our defense suffers because of our military overaggression. There is, of course, another war that's a very important war, and that's a war that we've been waging essentially against ourselves for decades now, and that's the war on drugs. Where do you stand on the war on drugs?
Well, as you probably are aware, and a lot of listeners on this show are aware, the war on drugs was started in 1971 under President Richard Nixon. Mm-hmm. In that time, or since that time, we've spent well over, I think if I remember my numbers properly, about $1.5, $1.6 trillion mm-hmm. in that effort. And that's starting with a T. It's created the largest incarceration rate of any country in the industrialized world, period. We have approximately, I think every year, if I remember the numbers properly, about 2 to 3 million folks that are incarcerated every year. Over 800,000 of those are people convicted of what you call nonviolent crimes, i.e. drug possession or some other related type offense. This is destroying families, simply put. And mm-hmm. it's actually disproportionate to social class. When you find that drugs such as cocaine, which tend to be used by more affluent folks, they tend to spend less time or evade long-term incarceration opposed to mm-hmm. people who smoke, say, marijuana, which tends to be less expensive, hence used by lower-income individuals. Mm-hmm. They will spend a larger amount of time behind bars than those who are not. So it's just unfair socially. And quite frankly, from a, you want to call it, personal liberty standpoint, mm-hmm. people have the right to be, to make their own decisions. And whether you agree with some decisions or not, if you're not impeding the civil rights or constitutional rights of other individuals, you should be allowed to do what you want to do. Again, providing that you're not violating someone else's rights and putting others at risk.
Now, now let's say we manage to do that. Let's say we end the war on drugs. What do you think that's going to do to violent crime?
Well, the reason why I think there's a lot of violent crime that's tied to drugs is because it's an economic factor. Mm-hmm. There's not a legal recourse to settle disputes, quite frankly. If you have a dispute against somebody who shorted you on a shipment or didn't pay you the amount that you needed, mm-hmm. the way you handle that, just like you did with Prohibition, we did with Prohibition years before, is by violence. Mm-hmm. And that creates an element that is unsavory and permeates really up, down, sideways throughout society. So we're, in a sense, because of our policies, exacerbating the problem and creating a problem that might be relatively small in scale and making it much, much larger. So mm-hmm. historically speaking, it's proven that Prohibition does not work. I'm not saying everybody go out and light up or shoot up or anything like those lines. But what I'm saying is, because of the way the policies are set, you have to put people in the shadows. And when mm-hmm. you do that, that's where the crime element starts to grow and manifest itself in ways that are unmanageable.
And essentially, if we reverse that process, I mean, we really bring that out into the open, we're really talking about a situation where we will see probably a very substantial and essentially almost immediate decrease in violent crime.
Yeah, exactly. We're not just talking like the case study with how things worked out with Prohibition here in the United States back in the 1920s. We've got a modern look of how this is in places like Portugal, for example, who actually found at least somewhat some economic benefits from, if you want to call it, tourism because of it. So when you look at a state like Colorado, who has legalized beyond the regular medicinal purposes, I think what you're going to find is the criminal element is going to decrease significantly. And mm-hmm. once you take and make it a legitimate business, you tie where, now granted, I'm not in favor of necessarily taxes for tax sake, but if that may be one of those instances where a tax might be in order, where that could help with potential revenue and drive to other things. So again, it's one of the situations that our current policies have shown, and we've got over 40 years of history to kind of look back on and assess and quantify, that it has been a failure as a war policy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that I think stands, you know, I think pretty much a lot of people have come around to that viewpoint, which is that if we just stop this prohibition, we're going to be able to essentially eliminate a lot of the violence that goes with it. And like you say, we have so much evidence in favor of that, both American evidence from prohibition and common present day evidence from Portugal, or even arguably present day evidence from Colorado. Let's actually start talking about some of the other departments. But before we do that, I just want to ask you a specific question. Suppose that you're elected, will you be willing to sponsor or co-sponsor legislation to end the war on drugs?
Certainly.
And I think that's a really important difference for listeners to know. I mean, there have been plenty of candidates who have at some point pointed out a flaw in the war on drugs, but then not actually done anything to actually eliminate it. And the fact that we have candidates like you that are actually taking that next step really is a very, very critical distinction between you and some of the other candidates. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes, and I want to talk to you about shutting down some of the other federal departments. We are currently talking with Matt Solido, candidate for U.S. Congress in District 12. We just mentioned that he aims to reduce our military presence overseas, as well as to sponsor legislation to end the war on drugs. You can connect with him at votesolido.com, and the last name is spelled S-O-L-O-D-O-W. You're currently listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Want to help make our world a better place, but not sure where to start? Tune into Better Worldians Radio with the creators of the social game on Facebook called A Better World. Join hosts Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, who will inspire you to make a big difference in small ways. They'll speak to experts, authors, volunteers, and everyday people who are changing the world daily. Better Worldians Radio is heard live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Variety.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one Internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We're talking with Matt Solido, candidate for U.S. Congress in Texas, District 12. You can connect with him at votesolido.com. Matt, let's talk a bit about farm subsidies. You've spoken at length about that in other areas. Where do you stand on farm subsidies?
Well, I'm generally against subsidies of any sort, and there's a simple reason. It becomes basically a principle of core economics. When the government gets involved, it does create an unfair playing field, despite what other politicians will tell you. It basically, and I hate beating this down because you keep hearing it over and over again, but the opportunity for a legislative body to pick winners and losers. And the consumer always loses out, invariably, because choices are limited. It creates an environment where maybe it adds high regulations and costs that are attributed to those and prevents newcomers from coming into the marketplace. When you have a subsidy, and whether it's farming or auto industry or anything along those lines, you're basically saying, the government is saying, we're backing you, we're artificially propping you up. We're not using market indicators to determine whether you'll be successful or not, but what we're doing is artificially inflating it. And in doing so, they kind of hedge their bet, and they generally will create legislation that is tied to those items, and that creates a situation that, as well-intentioned as that may be, it kind of comes back and they say, okay, you need X amount of capital to start a new business. And because the cost of starting a new business is so expensive, it becomes prohibitive for new players to get into the game. Hence, the consumer loses out from innovative ideas and ingenuity that could come from those new players. When a government comes in and does that and they step in, it kind of voids that out or mitigates it significantly.
And that makes a huge amount of sense. So essentially what we're saying is that if you get rid of those subsidies, now you're allowing some of these great innovators, some of these new ideas, some of these entrepreneurs to come forward and bring us these great products that currently we're not getting, but we could be getting if we just kind of remove some of these blockades.
That is correct. And it's a very hard sell because it sounds so intuitive. We want to protect the farmers. But then if you look at it, the mom-and-pop farmer is... Well, most of the subsidies are not going to the mom-and-pop farmers, if you look at the numbers. It's mostly going to large conglomerates. Now, there's nothing wrong with large corporations and large conglomerates. I'm all in support of that. However, they should not be receiving taxpayer dollars to be subsidized, because what it does is, again, it enables them to get a foot in the door where they get political influence. They get to sway certain laws, certain regulations. They, in some cases, actually draft them up. And then the consumer, again, loses in favor of a corporation taking advantage or gaming the system. If you want to call it cronyism or crony capitalism, it equates directly to that.
And we've seen that with companies like Monsanto, where so many of the people who are supposed to regulate Monsanto are former Monsanto employees.
Yes. It's very interesting how that works, and it's strange. You know, people were talking about with Bernie Madoff, if you remember, with the ultimate Ponzi scheme. And the reason why he was able to be so successful is he was in so tight with the SEC and all the regulators. He knew exactly who the players were, and he knew how the system worked, and he knew how to game it and leverage it. And he did for many, many years.
Now, if we were to end farm subsidies, how would that affect our food supply?
I think, truth be told, I don't want to say increase or improve per se, but what I would say is it would create more options for people. And I guess that could be a measurable improvement. I think when it comes to choice, that's what it really comes, what the crux of the matter is. It would allow the consumer to be able to choose better. I think it would create a bit more competition. I think prices would drop. And we have enough historical evidence with other types of industries to show that. And food is a commodity like anything else. I know that it's essential to life. I get that. But it's a commodity, and when competitive forces do come into play, generally the quality goes up and the costs drop.
And so essentially, instead of just funding more and more corn, which so many people are arguing is maybe not the healthiest thing for the diet anyway, especially when it's then later processed into byproducts like high fructose corn syrup, that we could actually have a system where we have lower cost on healthier food because we're not propping up, you know, some of these very, very specific crops, while, of course, protecting the environment, because single crop is, you know, we know that from history, that single crops are not usually the best thing for the environment anyway.
Right. And in a strange way, if you recall when ethanol, fortunately, we've gotten a little bit past that, and that people have kind of figured it out with ethanol. they were getting all these subsidies to grow corn. And ironically, it was actually hurting people across the world, because there were farms in Asia, for example, that used to grow soy. And you can grow a lot more soy in less space than you can corn. And when they started with the ethanol, people said, hey, let's grow corn instead. We're not going to sell it for food purposes. We're going to sell it for fuel purposes. And there were a lot of people that were relying on soy and other types of crops to grow. And all of a sudden, that started to get depleted. So it actually had a very, very negative effect to other people around other parts of the world that was not readily available.
That, I mean, that's just one of those many sort of unintended consequences from some of these central planning debacles.
Yep.
You've talked also about shutting down other federal departments. You've mentioned that you'd be willing to sponsor legislation. Actually, let's back up real quick. Would you then be willing to sponsor legislation to end some of these farm subsidies?
Of course. Yeah.
Awesome. And I just want to really put that out there. I mean, that is a key difference, because there are plenty of people that have said, look, these farm subsidies aren't working, but then they continue to vote for them, or they refuse to sponsor legislation to end them. The fact that we have candidates like you that are really specific, that say that, you know, you get there, you will sponsor legislation to end these subsidies, and here's how it's going to benefit you. It's going to give you better food. It's going to help the environment. It's going to do all these wonderful things. And that's a very, very key difference, that it's not just lip service to liberty, but it's real liberty that we're talking about through actually cutting government.
Certainly.
You've talked about ending other federal departments. You've mentioned that you'd be willing to work towards ending the TSA. Now, some people have said that if you end the TSA, that there could be a security risk. So what are the benefits to the average person of ending the TSA?
Well, besides the benefit of convenience and having to get to the airport 3 hours early before flight, et cetera, I think what you're going to find is there's going to be a bit more overall vigilance with individuals and also with the airlines themselves. It's a situation, and it's amazing. I know people can say, well, we haven't had a 9/11 since the TSA was brought in, but I think that's a bit of a myopic view. They've done many, many audits, and what I mean by, and their version of an audit is, they have someone come in, pretend that they're a customer, and they see what they can get through. And it's amazing. I heard up in Seattle there were some cases in San Francisco, in LaGuardia Airport, in Wichita, Kansas, airports all over the country, where they found that people had plants in there going through their security measures, and they found they were able to get various weapons through without any issue. So I think that's a little bit of a myth as far as the actual safety and how safe it really adds. So to answer that question, I think it would be beneficial if you want to obviously have metal detectors and do those things. Yes, of course, I'm all for taking some measures, but I don't think having the TSA as a federalized entity, the way it's kind of linked through the Department of Homeland and Defense and all the bureaucracy that's tied to that, there are more efficient ways of doing it. And a more efficient way would be privatization of it, maybe doing it in a different, more mobile way. In other words, having easier technologies that people can go through much more seamlessly. For example, you go through a toll road. I know I may be oversimplifying it a bit, but today you can go through toll roads without stopping to put your coins in. You can be going at full speed, and with the toll tag, it picks it right up and it knows exactly where to send the bill to, et cetera. You can do a similar type situation with security, I believe, although it's a little bit harder because of the way X-rays are and the way you have to kind of find weapons if someone's got a knife or a gun. I get that, but I think if we want to have some good just basic metal detectors, that's fine and good. But the way you have to take off your shoes and these other things, it's just I think it's gone way too far over to the other side.
But I mean, there's a nuance which says that, let's say there's an airline and what their selling point is that they are the highest security airline. Mm-hmm. It's like we don't have any problem with one airline saying, listen, here's our security. We're going to have everybody completely strip search all the time so you know that this airline, nobody can bring anything and you're not allowed to wear clothes or anything on this airline ever. I mean, that's a private airline. And if they want to set up their rules to be even more extreme than the TSA, that's fine. I mean, that's a private choice.
Yeah.
But the idea that the government says that everybody should go through this sort of ludicrous and not even terribly effective system, I mean, that's really where the problem is. So it's kind of like what you were saying with choice before, that if you have more choices, everybody can pick the type of security that they feel most comfortable with.
Certainly. Exactly.
What are some of the other departments that you'd be wanting to end?
Well, I think, like, for example, the Department of Education and the Department of Commerce don't serve what their initial intent was very well. Department of Education, perfect example. We've basically, if you compare the numbers, the graduation numbers, to those, say, in 1972, the Department of Education, if you recall, was enacted under the Carter administration in the late 70s, I think 1979 to be specific, 78, somewhere in there, 78 or 79.
Mm-hmm.
The scores have remained stagnant and in some cases have decreased, mm-hmm. But the costs have skyrocketed in real dollars. So if you take nationally, in today's dollars, in 1972, for example, we were spending about $2,500 per year per student. Today, depending on where you are in the country, but on average, it's in the ballpark between $10,000 and $12,000 per student, but mm-hmm. the results are certainly not the same. And you have to ask yourself the question, why is that the case? Well, simply put, I think our education system, for the most part, is a monopoly. I am not in favor of abolishing public schools. What I am in favor, though, of is having public schools having to compete, whether it's through charter school setups or some sort of private enterprise, where let the parents choose where their child can go to school. Let them determine what they think is the most suitable education for their kids, and have the results speak for themselves. This would enable accountability, mm-hmm. and I believe you would get an increase in performance for less dollars.
And that makes a lot of sense. And those are mm-hmm. things that we can really get, or at least start the process with, by ending the Federal Department of Education. Anyway, first let me thank you, Matt, for joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
We've been talking with Matt Solido, candidate for U.S. Congress in Texas, District 12. He aims to end foreign wars, end the war on drugs, shut down federal departments, abolish farm subsidies and the TSA, and really work to improve your life by getting the government out of the way. You can learn more about him at votesolido.com, and you can learn more about the Libertarian Party at lp.org. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back.